Welcome to the Next Level Soul Podcast, where we ask the big questions about life. Why are we here? Is this all there is? What is my soul's mission? We attempt to answer those questions and more by bringing you raw and inspiring conversations with some of the most fascinating and thought-provoking guests on the planet today. I am your host, Alex Ferrari. I'm always looking to help the Next Level Soul audience take their soul to the next level. And I've been able to partner with Mind Valley to present you guys with a ton of free masterclasses between 60 and 90 minutes covering mind, body, soul, relationships, and conscious entrepreneurship. Some of these masterclasses are taught by spiritual masters, relationship experts, best-selling authors, legends in the personal growth and spirituality space, and so much more. So if you want to sign up for any of our free mind, body, and soul masterclasses, just head over to nextlevelsoul.com/free. Now, today on the show, we have author and actress Jocelyn Jones. Now, Jocelyn has been an acting teacher for over 30 years. From A-list stars to handpicked beginners, she is known for offering insights and techniques that enhance her clients' confidence and guide them to their own unique perspectives. In her new book, Artist, Awaken the Spirit Within, she teaches you how to tap into the power of creation by sharing the secrets behind her unique methodology. And Jocelyn and I had a fantastic conversation about not only being able to tap in as an artist, but how to create the life that you want. So let's dive in. I'd like to welcome to the show, Jocelyn Jones. How are you doing, Jocelyn?
I'm well, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. You've written this amazing new book, Artist, Awaken the Spirit Within. And it is a book that approaches the artistic process in a spiritual standpoint, coming from a different angle that I haven't really seen before. And I thought it would be a great conversation for people here, not just artists listening, but people who want to connect with the artists inside of them. And so many of us were like, oh, I really just want to play the guitar. Or I really just want to write, or I really just want to draw. I really want to paint. Or I really just want to make a film or whatever it is. And I think a lot of us are afraid of that. So hopefully you're going to be able to help them with that today.
That was my intention in writing the book. It's so, to kind of, you know, lead people to the artists within them, because, you know, Alex, our first piece of art, our first masterpiece is our life. And people don't look at their life, you know, as their work of art, but it is, if you so choose. You know, you can have an artful life, meaning you are listening to your heart and going, this is what I want. These are the things I'm going to do to get that. And really taking guidance from yourself. That's what the book is about.
Now, how did you begin your journey, life's journey as an artist, and gotten to this point where you want to help other artists express themselves?
Well, you know, Alex, I think it started with spirit. There were two things in play. One was I grew up around an extraordinary group of artists. My dad was an actor, so I grew up in the theater. And then my mother remarried a writer who's in the art world. And so there were painters and choreographers. I mean, in the 70s, if you go up to the top of the food chain in the art world, and you know, I don't like to name drop, so, but in the art world, in the dance world, in the theater world, they were sitting around the table, and I was young and I was studying them, and I noticed that when they were working, they were lit from within. They were, you know, their vibration, their happiness, their joy, their articulation in their work was very, very high. And when they were not working, they were caved. So I became very interested in that. That's the, you know, one element of it is the artist. The other element was when I was young, not unlike many, many people, I felt very alone. I felt very disconnected. I didn't really have a strong connection with my parents. They weren't too interested in their kids. It was part of that generation of artists was, you know, we gave birth to you, go outside and play. But there was never a question, you know, there was no interest. I couldn't sense any interest in me. And so I didn't feel seen. And then I went to school and, you know, the teachers were, you know, didn't really see you. And I just noticed nobody's looking at it. Nobody's seeing anybody. And I felt kind of sad. And I was down by the river and I was skipping stones, you know, get those nice flat stones and you skip them and they go, and you get sometimes eight. You know,
wow, you're an eight or six.
Yeah,
I've got four. I haven't got eight.
I did a lot of stones. It's the stone, you know, mm-hmm. and it's a little bit of magic. Anyway, I was down by the river and I was playing like that. And I was about, you know, maybe seven, I don't know, eight. You know, I was walking to school and time was down there. I was talking and I started asking questions. And to myself, I was like, you know, why don't they see me? I mean, I came here to help. I felt I had a mission. I felt I was special. I mean, that's kind of odd to say, but I felt I was special and I had a mission and I had gifts and I brought them and nobody wanted them and nobody saw me and what was I to do? And so I was down there. I said, you know, who can I trust? And now, not to be too Disney about it, but I have a certain amount of consorting with the wind. You know, the wind came up on that question and blew this weeping willow whose weeps landed on my shoulder like a friend, very Disney, you know. Mm-hmm. And I kind of got the us was a reach out to me, us. And I don't hear that as a word. It's not like us. It's not a Disney, you know, being
there wasn't a cricket. By, there wasn't a cricket.
You know, there wasn't a cricket. There was Jiminy gotcha. Wasn't there. But I had this very, very strong connection to trees. Prior to that, you know, I'd lean up against them. I'd go to sleep under them. I had this very strong connection. Then I suddenly realized I am in communication with trees. And, you know, we lived on the Palisades overlooking the Hudson River. And I would go out all day and play in nature. And then I would lay on the rocks like a lizard and soak up the sun. And I would feel that I was in communication with the rock, that rock. I could feel its history and how long it had been there. I would rock hop on streams, you know, that have, you know, those wonderful streams, and they have big rocks in them that are, you know, thousands and thousands of years old. And one of my favorite things to do is to go up a stream, you know, run up a stream going rock to rock to rock to rock to rock, and see how fast you could go and how steady you could be on your feet. And I could feel the Algonquins under my feet. I could feel the history. So I had this strong connection to what I called spirit, and it really, for me, was in nature. And I assumed that to be my counsel. And that's how I began to being able to hear my higher self, because I had that connection.
So you've been around so many artists and artists out of, you know, some of the highest level artists, if you will, and highest performing artists in the world during your childhood and then throughout your career too, because you also were an actress and have worked in Hollyweird for many years and worked with some very high profile people in Hollywood. What do you believe is the mission, the spiritual mission of an artist? Because I think that there is... it's a special calling. It's not an easy one by any stretch, but it is a special calling. What's your opinion of that?
Okay. Well, I can tell you this. Well, first we have to talk about what art is. And, you know, I wrote, imagination is imperative with artists. So this, I'm gonna have a whole passionate thing I could go into here, which I won't go into, but it's about school and taking the arts out of school. And when you take, you know, the arts out of school, you take imagination out of school. And when you take imagination out, you take out leadership and you take out our future, really. So imagination is incredibly important. And artists, known artists, you know, there's art in everyone, but artists who know that they are artists from a young age have a very, very high imagination. And I believe the mission is, when your imagination vibrates at a very high level. So when you are joyous when you are imagining, when you are dreaming, you know, you're vibrating at a very high, high level. And at that level, you are capable of plucking impulse out of the ether, out of the ethos. This air that's all around us is pretty alive and spirited.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
So the artist's mission is to bring in what the universe wants expressed in art. So it is a mixture between the artist's personal life and experience and what they pull from the ethos or the ether or the universe. And then that gets expressed and it becomes universal because everybody recognizes it when it's an impulse from the ether, from the universe.
It's so Da Vinci, obviously, he could turn that tap on whenever he wanted, apparently.
Exactly. He lived in that tap. He lived in that spirited place, I believe. Yeah, I mean, maybe he had some down days.
Everybody has down days, but in general, it seems like, and even when you start studying some of the great artists in history, you start realizing how impactful their art really was. And I mean, you could talk about painters. You look at Van Gogh, or you look at Pollock, or Warhol, or any of these very famous works. Their art changed perceptions. Their art changed Basquiat. Their art changed the way people thought, and it kind of grew out of that. In the space that you and I come from, the filmmaking space, you know, you have people like Spielberg or Scorsese or Cameron. These juggernauts in the space, that when they make something, it shifts, you know, shifts the world's perception. Yeah. I mean, after Jurassic Park, dinosaurs took a completely different point of view from people in the world. I mean, people like, oh yeah, dinosaurs, those old bones, but now it brought imagination to multiple generations, and it's still going to this day. Someone like, you know, Cameron, and two that come to mind is James Cameron and Steven Spielberg. James Cameron's, his work, every one of his films, almost every single one, shifted things a bit. Like, you watch The Abyss, the messages in that, Avatar, Titanic, these kind of movies that just changed the zeitgeist in the planet.
Yes. Yeah,
and Spielberg, I mean, how many times did he do that? Yeah. He's still doing it.
Yeah. Well, you know, painters, dancers, you know, Twalia Tharp is the first one to marry, you know, modern and, you know, ballet and put things together in a different way. Artists, whether they're painters, dancers, musicians, you know, they are the only ones in the history of evolution who have changed the consciousness of the world. And it's because they're in tune with the higher spirit and where it wants us to go. Mm-hmm. And so then that gets expressed and then we move in that direction. So you can see when art is suppressed, and we can talk about art being suppressed and the art in anyone being suppressed, you know, we suppress that by corporate, we suppress that by money. We're going to go after the money, you know, so then we're going to make these kinds of films that aren't speaking to anyone really, except on a base level, on an entertainment level, you know. And we suppress that now with all the screens, you know, AI and Twitter and Reels. And, you know, if you ever looked at Reels, I only looked at Reels about 3 times, but they're thoroughly addictive on Instagram. You know, you start and the next thing you know, you're like 30 minutes in watching this stupidy stuff. So that's a suppression of art to me, because while you're doing that, you're not creating it. So going back to the person who every day feels that they're unhappy and they're unfulfilled and they're living this life, but they're not living it as a gift. they're not looking at this extraordinary planet we're living on. They're not in present time at all because they're numbed. They're numbed by education and the lack of it, really, and the lack of imagination, the lack of arts, the lack of support in them being a human being. And they're numbed by AI. They're numbed by television. I'm sorry, film and Instagram and Facebook and Reels and, you know, just time spent, and they can't hear themselves. So the book is about, what if we just slowed down?
Yeah.
And just spent some time alone and it, just got still and listened.
There are, and again, I'll go into the film space, because there's a couple of films that come to mind that when they came out, they changed consciousness. Mm-hmm. Two that stuck, obviously, Star Wars, because mm-hmm. when Star Wars came out, the concept of the Force is obviously extremely spiritual. Mm-hmm. The concept of the Jedi is very monk-like. And then all these stories, and it's like Lucas said, the meat and potatoes of society is mm-hmm. in these stories. So that when that movie came out, consciousness shifted. I think also when The Matrix came out, yes. consciousness shifted. Everyone's just like, what you mean what's here is not real? And then you can look at it at the base level, where are we in a computer simulation? Or you can look at it at a spiritual level, which is that The Matrix is where we are right now, but the real world is not the ugly place that they made it out to be, but is the real. And that's the spiritual world. So those things started shifting. And that's what great art can do. When great yeah. art is born, it will spread like wildfire, especially if the time is right. A movie like The Matrix coming out in the 20s, not so much.
The timing, you're absolutely right. One I thought you were going to say was Being There. Remember Being There?
Oh God, yeah, but that, yeah, I remember Being There.
I mean, he was just kind of, he was so in present time that he didn't make sense. They didn't make, you know, it was all about being in present time, being there.
There are certain movies, there are certain stories, there are certain books, certain pieces of art, certain artists that aren't acknowledged until they're long gone.
Yeah.
I mean, Van Gogh is a perfect example of that. I mean, he never sold a painting, I think, in his life. And he's now, you know, I think his last one sold for $100 million. Or something like that.
Crazy.
It's insane. So there are artists sometimes who are a little too early ahead of the game. Da Vinci arguably is really ahead of the game. He really did a lot.
Yeah. You know, I it's so interesting that you say they're ahead of the game, because I didn't think of it that way. I think you're absolutely right. But I thought of it more like he couldn't have painted if he'd been acknowledged and recognized to that degree. He couldn't have painted those paintings.
But they
His
weren't
spirit was to, he had to live the life he lived to paint those paintings.
But they weren't ready for him. He was living in a time where, you know, many people still believed that the earth revolved, the whole world, the whole universe revolved around the earth and not the sun. And that kind of ignorance that wouldn't allow, that's like a lot of the things that he drew, and there's the hidden ideas in his paintings and mathematics. And I mean, he was at a whole other, just completely other level to the, we're still trying to figure it out. Shakespeare. We're still trying to figure it out today. I mean, the amount of concepts and words and ideas that came out of Shakespeare's plays were revolutionary, that in the time that he was alive, people didn't really grasp it as well as they do now. And even now it still takes a minute to read a Shakespeare play and understand it. It's just a whole other experience. So it's really interesting that when the art's supposed to come into space, into where we are right now, it does. Not necessarily means that it will be accepted at that time, but it will move things forward. And it might be a little slow, and it might pop 10 years from now, 100 years. And you and I've seen that with movies, that you're like, how did this movie not make more money? Why was this movie not more well respected? What happened? And I always bring up Shawshank. Like when that came out, people were like, this is good, it's well written, but it didn't grab the zeitgeist until years later, until now it's considered one of the greatest films ever made, you know, and arguably stated. So it's really interesting. Now, as an artist, you know, we always want to kind of, I want you to talk to the people in the audience who aren't outed as an artist, who don't understand that they might be an artist. And there's not an all or nothing scenario here. You could do artistic things and tap into that spiritual artistic side of you without, I'm quitting my job as a lawyer, I'm quitting my job as a doctor to be an artist, unless you want to go down there. But you can start to play with that energy, because if there's something inside of you that's saying, you know, I really want to paint, I really want to draw, I really want to write, I really want to do dance, whatever it is, how do you tap into that and start to let that flourish a little bit? Because there's a lot of walls, a lot of blockages, a lot of concepts, a lot, your brain, your ego stopping you from moving forward in that space. So what would you suggest for those people? We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Well, I'm going to answer your question. I wanted to go back a little bit to what you said about that. It's, you know, things aren't being made, but then it's not right for the zeitgeist and it happens later. So I just wanted to talk about a little bit there about, you know, we're there now. We can look at that. What don't we know now? What art is being, you know, created that we're not quite ready for? And so one of the reasons that I wrote the book was because I believe there's art in everyone. And I believe that some people have not tapped into the very thing we're going to talk about. And they could be the one that has the voice. You know, Van Gogh was a simple guy who lived in a village who was painting paintings because he had to paint paintings. So, you know, we don't know where those expressions of art that we need right now on the planet, we don't know where they're going to come from. And they may come from you, audience. Mm-hmm. They may come from, you know, anyone. So I think it begins with this communication with self. You know, as I've talked about, art and joy go hand in hand. That is a very high vibrational level. Art is a very high vibrational level. People who have not, you know, either acknowledged, you know, they want to be an actor, but their family goes, you know, grow up and go to law school. You know, there's that level that they kind of know they wanted to be an actor. And then there's a level where people don't feel they're an artist at all. And you can wake up from that level as well. But one of the systems to do it is to raise your vibration. So in the book, we give examples of how to do that. One of them is to make a joy list, literally write down things that bring you joy. So I've given this to actors. You know, I gave this to an actor who had a very, very big series in his career, and nothing else in his career could quite match that series. And, you know, he'd had a bad divorce, and they hadn't divorced, they were separated. I gave him this because he looked very sad. And I thought, you're not going to book from this space, you know, that you're living in. Just like, I want to raise this guy down here who doesn't even know he's an artist. So I said, I want you to give me a list next week about things that bring you joy. So the next Monday he came to class and goes, Jocelyn, really, man, I got one thing on the list. And I went, okay, what is it? He goes, golf. I go, okay, that's the start. So next week, I want you to go through your life and look at what things used to bring you joy, all the way back to childhood. The next week, he came with a list that, you know, I got this, and I used to love to play ball, and I love movies, and I never watched them. And he had, you know, 8 things on his list. And I said, okay, I want you to take your calendar. I want you to take 2 of these things, and I want you to put them on your calendar and do them. You know, he loved going to the museum, go to 2 museums in LA. People don't do that. So his spirit started coming up. His level of joy started coming up. His vibration came up, you know, and then I talked about a few other things. Don't do things that are not good for you. He goes, what do you mean? I said, you're drinking too much. No. He said, I go, yeah. So stop it. We talked about stop it. So, you know, how about a little less of that? And, you know, you're kind of screwing everything in a skirt. And he said, well, you know, I'm separated and I'm sad. And I go, stop it, you know, knock that off. And by the way, either get back with your wife or let it go. This guy got a divorce, was doing the things he loved, stopped screwing around, stopped drinking. I said, grow your hair out, this is sexier, long hair. And he started booking and got a huge series. So it's a matter of lifting the spirit up to it. So I tell people, you know, meditate, even if it's 10 minutes a day, to create space just so you can begin to have a conversation with yourself. Make a joy list. Write down 5 things you're grateful for every day. Gratitude instantly lifts your spirit. When you go, you know, I'm grateful for where I live. I'm grateful for this person in my life. Instantly, your spirit is lifted. Just on that feeling, you know. As you rise up in the tone, your own tone level, your own, you know, frequency, more imagination will begin to operate. And you can start asking yourself important questions like, if you could have anything in the world, barring all obstacle, what would that be? And don't answer it. I mean, you'll get an intellectual answer. Ask again, keep asking until your heart kind of starts vibrating and you go, oh, that's exciting. Then you know you have it. Like, so when you figured out to do your podcast, your heart was pounding. You went, that's it. I want that.
Yeah, it seemed that that was the, you know, my wife even looked at me and said, hey, you seem so much happier.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing this now almost 7 years. Yeah. And she's like, you seem happy, you know, and I've been with you for a long time. And you weren't happy for a while because you were struggling through other things that just didn't make you as happy. And there was a reason why those doors weren't opening as much as they should have been opening. Which brings me to my next question. So many of us, and so many of us, we need to work on letting go and letting go of certain things. And many of us hold on to them on a conscious level. Many of us hold on to it on a subconscious level. And those things hold us back from our true purpose, our true mission, our true things that we need to be doing in this world. And sometimes it holds us back for a year. Sometimes it holds us back for a lifetime. Yeah. What can we do to let go of those anchors, those stories, the stories you tell yourself, the stories other people tell you that you believe, these kind of, what can we do to let those go besides just saying, stop it?
Stop it.
Exactly.
You know, the real thing is you have to recognize we're spirit in body, right? And we have an ego. We have a personality. And we work on this personality a lifetime, you know, from the get-go. We go, I have my personality. You have one and I have one. And it's how we can be separate expressions of consciousness, right? Is I have this personality, you have that personality. But we are much, much more than our personalities. But because we haven't been educated to it, because we haven't practiced being, we're human beings and we don't know how to be. Because we haven't practiced being, which is being able to walk in the world and observe without judgment and just take in the moment what is actually occurring. That's truth. That's the only truth there is, really. But we're not practiced in that. And we're all about ego. And we're also, you know, corporate and lots of people are making money off of our egos. And so it's very, very stimulated. And it just thinks it's the cat's meow. To let go, you have to let go of ego, because our traumas are all live in the ego. In the now, we don't have any traumas. Traumas are from the past. And traumas are worry about the future because of the past. But there is no trauma in the present. So when you practice being in the present, the ego loses its grip. Now, the ego doesn't want to lose its grip because we love our personalities. You know, we're generally not going to say we love our egos because that means we're egocentric. So it's easier to say personality, but it's really the same thing. And it's not a bad thing, you know, it's just way, way, way out of balance. And some people have absolutely zero concept that they're anything more than their personality. Well, my personality defines me. These problems define me. That trauma defines me. I identify with all of these things and everything that's mine, I identify with. But really, we're just a spirit having this wonderful game in a body with this sensory equipment.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now, back to the show.
So that consciousness can experience itself. And we just need to get in a little bit more balance. So letting go has to do with recognizing that, creating a little space so that you can be and recognize, I don't need that anymore. I don't need to think about it anymore. Really, it's about, we think about it. We just spend all this time thinking, you know? We think about, and then we make lists. We're justified in our thinking. Look, this thing happened to me and I'm right in being a victim because this happened and this happened. We're lawyers and we have a whole long list and he did this and she did that. And come on, you got to admit, this was really terrible. And, you know, just long, long lists. We hold up. Look, I got evidence. But you're so much more. You're a being. You're just holding on to that. As long as you hold to that, onto that, look at that arm. That's just a hunk of space that you don't have anything, you can't do anything else with. If you let that space go by just going, you know, okay, that's just my thinking, those are just my considerations, you gain an entire unit of space to create in, and that's what you're here to do, is create your life. You're here to take the whispers of the universe and express them in some way, whether it's engineering or inventing or art or, you know, any number of bookbinding, you know, any number of ways. You have a purpose. You have a contribution. You're worth, you know, your wife says you're happy in this job because you are contributing and you know it and it's beautiful. We're all here to contribute our piece of the puzzle. So I'm just about helping people find out, what's my piece? What does it look like? How do I make that?
Now, it's so many times as artists, you hear about the muse, the muse that's supposed to come and show up, and she's normally laid out as a she because of Greek, I think it's Greek mythology, if I'm not mistaken, where the muse first came in. And, you know, after speaking to so many different artists over the years, I'm always fascinated. I'm like, do you ever find that moment when you're writing and all of a sudden you look down and go, wow, who wrote that? Like, you've channeled in, you've tapped into that thing. What advice do you have for people who are looking for that inspiration, to try to tap into that inspiration, to raise their vibration, if you will, high enough to be able to tap in to that situation? Because if you're coming from a very heavy place like ego, it's tough to tap into that, you know, when you're, and you might get lucky once, and we've seen this in Hollywood. One time they like, oh, the one hit, and then just like, gone. Never hear from them again, because they were coming at it from a different place. But when you hear, I'll bring up Steven again, Mr. Spielberg, he's coming from a completely different place, and he's been able to do it consistently since the 70s.
Yeah.
At a level that nobody in the industry has ever heard. So he's obviously at a different vibrational pitch, if you will, that is able to continuously tap in to that thing. And the universe is continuously going, let's give this one to Steven. No, we'll give the Avatar thing over to James Cameron. I think he'll be better at that. you know, no, we'll give Nolan that Inception thing. Yeah, we'll give Steven will be good for this. These kind of things. So how do you suggest people tap into that muse or prepare themselves to tap into it?
Well, if you take a look at Steven Spielberg, he's romancing the muse. He wants it. He intends it. So part of it is, you know, we are our intention. If we're intending to impress somebody, then we're going to do all these things to impress them. If we're intending to listen and see them, then we're going to open space and receive them, you know? So intention, if you look at us as these very fast spiritual beings, our intention is everything. You know, if you're trying to get from here to a department store, and you know, you think about this restaurant over here, you know, you're gonna just you can go off in the wrong direction. That was a terrible analogy, but you can go off in the wrong direction very, very quickly. So the first intention is to romance the muse. I want a relationship with the muse. The muse is that piece of the ethos, that's that thing in the universe that I talk about, that when you intend to get in communication and use your art, whether it's acting, writing, or creating your life, that you mm-hmm. ask questions of it and it arrives. So yeah, you have to have the intention that you want to do that, and you have to be at a high enough vibrational level to hear. You know, to hear, you know, down at a lower vibrational level, it's noise. You know, you have the news, and you have the news is enough to kill anybody. You know, it really is dragging us down. And we want to bring humanity up from the very bottom for everyone. Everyone has this in them. Everyone can connect in this way. If we just give them a shot, you know, a roof over your head, some. My husband did a film about Rosie Grier many, many years ago. It's one of his first documentaries he made. He's a director. And Rosie grew up in a house with 11 kids. Rosie came in a certain way, and he had a higher vibration. And he said, I'm going to school. Nobody went to school. He said, I'm going to school. And we go, honey, school's too far away. He walked to school. At six, he walked to school. He had a vision. He followed that vision. I want to reach the other 10 kids in the house and say, you're worth it. Don't go with the story of we have no food and, you know, mom's this and dad. Don't go with the story you're born into. Go with what you hear in your heart. You have a purpose. You have a mission. So you have to first intend it. Once you intend it, then the exercises will come flooding into you. You know, my book, somebody else's book, a certain movie, you know, those things just, you know, law of attraction is a real thing. If you think negative things, those you're going to, that it's a mirror, you know, it's like, oh, you know, this terrible thing. If I do this, this bad thing's going to happen. Well, you're going to prove that right. You know? So it's not airy fairy, like I'm going to think, you know, lovely thoughts, you know, wonderful. Like in Peter Pan, what was it? Lovelier thoughts, Michael. And then he flew, you know, it is a little bit of a parallel. But anyway, first you have to intend it. And you, I mean, just take a look at it, Alex. A lot of people aren't intending anything.
No, they're that just trying guy to, they're in survival mode. They're in survival mode.
That guy you talked about, the one hit wonder. He probably intended it and got that piece of art done. And then the powder puff came in and everybody told him how marvelous he was. Oh. And he fell into his ego and he didn't even think to intend to make the same kind of connection.
It's interesting because, you know, I've arguably been a student of artists since I was a teenager, because I was constantly reading biographies, constantly studying how other people made it in the industry as an artist, in the film industry as an artist. So I was constantly searching and looking and trying to figure out, okay, what path should I walk? And it took me 20 odd years to figure out. I'm like, you got to walk your own path, brother. You can't go to Universal Studios, jump off the tram, set up an office and start making calls like Steven did. You can't make El Mariachi like Robert did. You can't, there's certain stories and they're inspirational, but those things can't happen again for anybody else. They were very specific for that person at that time in their lives. And as I've spoken to many artists too, that, you know, one that comes to mind who I won't name had a huge splash in the 90s, monstrous. And he was a talk of the town and everybody wanted to be in business with him. And something happened where he derailed his own life. And he's been struggling ever since to come back from that. And he has to a certain extent, but the potential of where it could have been is really interesting to me. But there's, I've spoken to the one hit wonders, and, yeah. And also just being able to psychologically deal with that, that hit is difficult for many people. It's very difficult.
Yes. It's fame is very, very, very tough. I mean, it's like a Turkish delight, you know, in the Narnia stories. It's like, I want more, I want more, I want more. And so this intention that I'm talking of, I want to explore artistically what else is there for me. You take a look at someone like Meryl Streep's career, you know, she's always reinventing. It's all her intention is about the character, it's about expression through another, a different, a new character. That's her intention. So, you know, intention is a huge part of it. And we have to realize how powerful that is.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Our intention.
And watching someone, Meryl's is such a great example, because arguably there's very few actors in the history of cinema that have done what she's done. And that every single time she just shows up to work, there's something magical that happens. It's like she's been nominated, what, 100 times for an Oscar? I mean, it's insane. Basically every year she's up. Every year she's always in the conversation. She's always nominated in one way, shape, or form. And I always find her fascinating because she's tapping into something as an actor. And maybe you can speak more eloquently about it than I can, since you are an actor and teach acting and have been in that space for a long time. She is able to tap into the ether in her performances consistently in an authentic way that you believe who she is. And that's the job of an actor, is for you to do exactly what Meryl Streep does, that Daniel Day-Lewis does, that Denzel does, these masters of the craft, that they just turn it on effortlessly at this stage in their careers because they've been working on it for so long. But Meryl, she's just able to tap in to that thing, whatever that thing is, but she's able to do it as an actor. What is it about her abilities that allow her to continuously do that? Is, I mean, the only word that comes to mind is authenticity. She attaches an authenticity to every character she plays in a way that most of her contemporaries cannot do. Consistently, at least.
Well, yeah, it's a, you know, actors, there's a technique to acting. People very rarely understand what it is that actors do. And, you know, I was able to deliver a real meat and potatoes, a technique, is, you know, starting with, where are you? Actors create life out of nothing. And the reason I believe that we're so attracted to actors, and, you know, you don't have movies if you don't have actors, you don't have anything if you don't have actors. So the reason I believe that the audience is so attracted to actors is that when they create life before your very eyes, you are reminded that you are creating your own life. And if they can create that emotion and those inner feelings and this character before my very eyes, that I can leave my seat and enter because it's so authentic, which is a result of their work, surely I can create my life a little better. I think that is the underlying connection, that actors remind people that you're creating your life. What do you want to do with it? I just created this one before your very eyes. There's also something about parallel lives, because we are living parallel lives. We are all of a whole. So they're creating new lives in front of us. So it informs us about the nature of life and being. Now, the way an actor gets to that is by a series of questions and a series of inspired answers. So actors know, you know, starts out with, where am I? You can't have any scene, any place without, where am I? And as a director, you know this, because it's like your location. The actor looks at, where am I? Sometimes they're given, you know, the, where am I? In a television show, you're in a, you know, hospital. But where am I? And now I have to place myself where, and also with actors, it could be like when they're working in class, where could I be? Could it take place someplace else? And you keep asking, where am I and what's that about, until exciting things happen and you go, oh, what if it was this? And I did, you're waiting for that ha-ha moment. After where am I, it's what am I doing? What happened before this? What, I mean, these are a lot of questions for an actor to deal with. It's not like you have to answer all of them. It's like you have to review them and answer enough of them that excite you to what I call enter the character. I worked with a wonderful actor. I don't know if I can tell this anyway. We would work for 2 or 3 months before the shooting. And this actor said it kind of beautifully, that I would feed the machine, you know, here's some history about this character. Here's, you know, all kinds of research particles, where, what, who is he, who does he love? How does he love? I have all these questions in the book, by the way. And they're the same questions you can apply to your own life. Who do I love? How do I love? Who supports me? Who doesn't support me? You know, all these questions are exactly the same. And you ask these questions and you try clothes. Actors love clothes. They put on the hat, they take the cane, they put on the shoes. And at some point, something snaps. And it's not just that they enter the character, but the character, like a higher life, starts informing them and leading them. And that's what happens with masters. The technique, the bicycle riding of it, this, you know, very basic work that most actors can't do because they don't know to do it, are things like, you know, I can talk about working on The Butler because Forrest gave me a credit as a dramaturge on that, which was very kind of him, and the first time anyone's ever done that.
Oh, sweet.
He's a magnificent actor. And so for instance, you know, in The Butler, he's the butler and he's worked for 6 presidents, right? So I would do things like research what the papers, what was in the news, so that by the time, you know, I would say, so you sit down to breakfast with your wife, your son is, you know, a revolutionary, he's reading one set of newspapers, you're reading these newspapers. Okay, when you go to play this scene with the president, don't look at this piece of research until you go to do this scene, and then turn to this page. I always have the big books. And this is what he read in the newspaper that morning. And it would be Emmett Till's death. So the actor would look at Emmett Till's death and take in those photographs and that horrible event, and then play a scene that had nothing to do with it, with the president of the United States. That's acting. Actors know how to put those two, you know, ingredients together so that it broadens the scope of the being. And we go, oh my God, this is like a whole human being, because we have inner life and then we have our dialogue. And our dialogue is very often not so representative of what's going on inside of us.
Oh, so no, most of the times it isn't.
Yeah, most actors do words square. You know, they read the words, they get an idea of what they're supposed to sound like, and then they play them with all the emotion they can play. But Meryl Streep, Forrest Whitaker, Denzel, they're digging. They're digging for the parts that will call in that parallel being who will then start leading them. And then in this way, they're honoring another almost like another life form. It's pretty wild.
It's beautiful. It's a pretty insane, you know, and I've seen, you know, I've had the pleasure of working with some Oscar nominated actors in my career, and watching them work, it's fascinating. You know, mm-hmm. when they walked in, I'm like, oh, so this is what acting's like. Oh, I haven't been dealing with actors in my career so far until I started working with you, sir. Yeah, and you just see them and just like, wow, they're just at a different level. And we're talking about this for everyone listening because of understanding the process of an artist. and understanding a process of what it takes to tap into certain things. So I know many people listening right now are just trying to figure out how to even start this journey. But I also think it's a really educational process to show you what people at the highest level are doing and how they're able to do it. And that's what's to strive for if you're going down this path. And it doesn't have to be grandiose. You don't have to win an Oscar. You don't have to win a Pulitzer. It could be engineering. It could be architecture. It could be a million other different forms that this comes in. But the concepts all stay the same. It's coming. I do believe that art comes through us and through our filter.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
We are the filter. There's no question. So if I write a book, it's going to have my flavor in it, my experiences, my life, my the way I speak, it's going to have my voice. But the information's still going to have to come in from somewhere else. And that's what I think, after speaking to so many great artists, the real great ones understand that. They understand that, like, I'm just the dictator here.
I'm looking, and they're seeking it. They're intending it. So when you say, you know, you're writing the book, and then you look back and you go, did I write that? Happens all the time. Because also people should know, when you are going in the right direction, it starts to flow very, very quickly. Oh. That is the universe answering you. You know, I really feel, Alex, that we're on the precipice of I feel this way. Many people feel this way. Everybody on your show feels this way. We are on the precipice of a huge leap in evolution. Mm-hmm. And part of that leap is we have been learning by problems. You know, we get the problem, we have this trauma, we learn from it, and we move on, which is kind of a slow process. You know, I believe we're moving into a consciousness where we create space, just like that actor does ask questions. It all starts with creating the space to be there and to listen to counsel. It's interesting because I go to your higher self to listen to your higher self, but it's also listening to your heart. Some people, I just breathe into my heart and I'm suddenly there, just that breath into heart. But you're creating space to listen to counsel, to move toward that counsel. And then synchronicity comes in and goes, yep, yep, yep. And it's extraordinary that once you start on those three steps, space, listen, get the idea, move toward it. I promise you, you know, a hummingbird's going to come and tap on your window. Good job.
Or
the tree's going to, the wind's going to pick up in the trees and land on your shoulders.
Or the cricket's going to start talking. And then that's when the problems start. If the cricket starts talking to you, anyone listening, seek help.
If there's actual words. But if he just is chirping, just be acknowledging you're doing the good job.
That's fine. But if they start singing and dancing, let me know what you took. Because there's some ayahuasca stuff going on right now.
Ayahuasca is involved. I used to tell my actors that, you know, you're in a forest, you know, can you see the trees? And they go, yeah, I can see. I said, you're never going to see the trees, honey. I mean, if you actually see trees, we have a problem. But if you look out into the audience and you imagine the specificity of that tree will appear for you and the audience. But yes, no seeing trees.
Please. Now, Jocelyn, tell everybody where they can pick up your new book, Artists Awaken the Spirit Within.
Well, you can certainly pick it up on Amazon and any other place they sell books. It will be there.
Okay. For you. And I have two questions I ask all my guests on the show. What is your mission in this life?
You know, my mission is to help. I just want to help. And, you know, I have a lot of counsel. I have a lot of, you know, things that I hear, I write very fluidly. But my job is not to tell anybody anything. I really feel the job of an educator, which is what I'm most interested in, is to bring people to themselves because they know the answers. And so my mission is to do that, to not tell you the answers, but to tell you, you know the answers. Here's the space where you'll be able to hear them.
And what is the ultimate purpose of life?
You know, I think to love and be loved. I think to practice kindness. I think to do what you know in your heart is the right thing to do, even if it's, you know, not convenient.
Good answers. Simple, good answers. Jocelyn, it has been an honor and privilege having you on the show. And I want to have you back soon just to keep talking about this subject and many others I know that you are capable of speaking of. So I appreciate you coming on the show. And thank you so much for writing the book. And thank you so much for doing what you do for artists out there, because it's lonely out there for the artists. The artist sometimes could be very lost and it needs a little guidance, even if it's not a finding the artist inside of you and not just being an artist in general, but just everything entailed. So I appreciate what you do. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Alex. It's been an immense pleasure.
I want to thank Jocelyn so much for coming on the show and sharing her knowledge and journey with all of us. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, including how to get her new book, Artist, Awakening the Spirit Within, head over to the show notes at nextlevelsoul.com/102. And if you've only been listening to this over podcast and you want to watch these amazing conversations, please subscribe to our YouTube channel at nextlevelsoul.com/YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, trust the journey. It is here to teach you. I'll talk to you soon.